Hello, good evening and welcome. Good to be back. Well, while most of us were on holiday, livestock farmers certainly were not. They were dealing with their version of COVID-19, the foot and mouth disease, which started around the middle of last year, has been spreading now like wildfire and threatening farmers with destitution. We got hold of Emma Nyland, who is a consultant, farmer Pete Keane, and vet Andy Lund. I asked Emma what foot and mouth disease is doing to farmers' balance sheets, income statements, and livelihoods.
Alec, it has been absolutely catastrophic. You can't imagine it until you see it. We've got many of our farmers that have had outbreaks since June of this last year, and hundreds are really battling at the moment. It is flying through the country, and the costs are ramping up. Medical costs are going up massively, and income's dropping because their milk can halve. It can go down 70% for the month, and a whole lot of animals are being culled out the system. On average, we've seen that the cost that we're losing per animal is about 4,000 to 6,000 rand per animal in herd, which is catastrophic. It's something that farmers can't carry. And some of our farmers haven't just been hit once, but they're on the second or third outbreak already.
Just explain that, animal cruelty, how that comes into play.
Alec, we're seeing animals that cannot eat, they cannot walk, their udders are exploding. We're having to milk them out so that they don't die, but the milking machine is stripping the skin off their teats. There are blisters inside the teat canals that are having to be opened before the milk can come out. And it looks like a war zone. There are animals lying around the dairy. They cannot move. They cannot eat. Skin is coming off their tongues. It's really just catastrophic. And without the vaccine, we're not going to be able to get any better.
So wow. A picture paints 1,000 words. That's what we're dealing with. It looks like someone's taken a blowtorch and burnt the skin off her teeth. So what follows on from that is severe mastitis. And yes, she can recover, but quite often her production has gone to zero. And that's the milk check that the farmer relies on every single month to pay his salaries, to pay his creditors, you know, running a normal business like anyone else. So the economic impact is massive. You were asking Pete about the mortality rates. The mortality rates vary a lot, as Pete says. It's not as much of a death sentence as African horse sickness is in horses. But we are seeing, for example, litters of piglets with 95% mortality rates. Literally, out of 110 piglets, 90 are dead. And yet other animals will make an uneventful recovery, lose all the skin on their tongues, their feet, sometimes the entire hoof wall peels off. If that happens, they're walking on the bones of their legs and they have to be shot. There's no way you can fix that. So the mental impact on a farmer having to shoot his own livestock for welfare reasons on a disease that is actually preventable, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking for us as vets because we are completely hand-tied to do anything about it.
This is equivalent to a fire in someone's house. So if the viewers are watching, if you've got a fire in your house, the vaccine is equivalent to the water in that fire. So to understand it, if you have a fire there, you have to call the government and notify them that you've got a fire. So they will then send someone out if it's not weekend or Christmas or not on leave, and they have been to another fire in the last 7 days because it's contagious. They will then come and have a look maybe 2 or 3 days later and say, well, we'll send some water and we'll find someone to supply the water. About 7 days later, they might come back to you and say, okay, we're sending some water and you'll have to pay for it. That is the analogy that I use to compare the way that foot and mouth is administered today and the reason for the carnage that we're seeing, the economic loss, the psychological issues, and the threat to food security. I would do my best to change the legislation to say, farmers, this is no longer state controlled to this degree. The only thing we can do now is vaccinate, vaccinate, and vaccinate.
US President Donald Trump has announced a new squeeze on Iran, a 25% tariff on goods from any country doing business with a Middle East nation. For South Africa, that raises fresh questions about trade exposure and fallout. Bloomberg's Jumana Vakechi speaks to former US Ambassador William Roebuck on whether tariffs can really bite and what comes next for Iran's embattled regime.
Is this one way for the U.S. to exert extra pressure on the Iranian regime without necessarily getting involved directly?
That's right. I think they're probably looking at their options, and they're weighing also President Trump's rhetoric so far, and they're looking for tools that they can use in the toolkit. And I think President Trump is comfortable using tariffs. I don't think it's going to have much impact inside Iran. I think it might have some impact on our economic relations with China. But that's a different subject. So I don't really see it as a very effective weapon, but I think it's a tool that at least he can show that he's doing something if he decides not to go to more aggressive means through military steps.
Mm. Mm. And it seems as though the U.S. And Iran are somewhat reopening up the diplomatic angle, the diplomatic channels as well. The foreign minister allegedly spoke to Steve Witkoff over the weekend. And what hope is there at this point for a diplomatic solution that at the same time would allow President Trump for the off-ramp to not get involved so long as these demonstrations are still taking place?
Right now, it's a very tough situation inside Iran. The regime clearly feels deeply threatened. They are using very heavy levels of lethal force, violence, to suppress these demonstrations. And the death toll has already mounted, according to estimates that were given, of about 500 to 1,000 people killed and 10,000 injured and another 10,000 in prison. So it's already getting quite dramatic. The Iranian regime and the U.S. government are able to find an off-ramp relatively quickly before the bloodshed gets too bad, it's possible the Trump administration could see a way to do that and see some advantages to it. But I think if the blood toll gets too bad, if it goes on too many days, too many weeks, and so many people have been killed, it's going to be difficult, I think, for the Trump administration to find a way to reach a diplomatic settlement.
This is where the unthinkable happened. They just came here and took his car.
No. I sold it to them. What's this?
It's crime scene tape. Did they pay you at least?
Within 15 minutes, money was in my account.
Were you happy with the number they brought you?
I got almost the same price as what I paid for the car. Everything was easy, everything was painless.
Well, there you have it, South Africa. With We Buy Cars, you won't come short. I'll tell you really.
1.93.
We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
David Shapiro has been serving his clients for over half a century and the rest of us for almost as long as that by sharing the wisdom that he has received in the work that he's been doing, trading shares on behalf of clients and I guess also on behalf of himself. It's not surprising that he's known as South Africa's favorite stockbroker. But in a piece that he wrote for BizNews, he bewailed the fact that the titans, the business titans of a bygone age are just that, of a bygone age. And where are they? Where are the new guys? And why haven't they emerged?
You know how it started? The last conversation we had, you asked me that question. You said to me, who are the people we look up to? Who are the businessmen we look up to? And I thought about it. I had no quick answer. And I said, Alec, there aren't any. In other words, we don't have the kind of businessmen or women that we used to have in the past. Nowhere near those kind of people anymore. And it bothered me. And I had a lot of time over. I didn't go away. I went to the game reserve for a few days and I came back and I started to mull over what you had asked me and go back in my past about the time that I'd spent on the market and the people that, who used to influence the direction of the economy. And I think that's important. And there is no answer. I'm not a great academic in that way. And I had to try to think through it. And I came with three paths. I said the first was obviously
overreach.
We had some great leaders, but we, as soon as exchange controls opened, a lot of companies just went overseas without really thinking about it, caused a lot of damage. The other, without doubt, is the transformation, 1994 onwards, BEE and so on, what that's done to business people. And the third is, because of that, as a result of all of that, we're not developing anything. We've got no technology. And so, you know, I try to think about it. Alec, believe me, when I write an article, I go through every word. I go through constructing. I can't sit down like you. I've got a son, Jonathan, who's with a financial review. He's here at the moment. He can just sit down and, you know, I've read your pieces. They just flow beautifully. Now, with me, it's a labor. It's like I have to construct these. But it does give you the chance to think very, very deeply about where we are. So I have no doubt that if we had the kind of business people that we had in the past, we'd have a different economy. If we had that energy, if we had those foresights, the courage to do what they did. And, you know, we can go through some of them because I can go back a lot further than the ones that I mentioned in the article, just how they shaped it. And Alec, if you have a seminar and you think about those seminars that we used to have, the Financial Mail, whoever they were packed with some really strong voices. And I think we miss those people. You know, they gave us direction. They gave us confidence. So, yeah, it's we need to build those people up. We need to build up business people who are prepared to take risk, who are prepared to forge this economy, you know, find gaps there, forge it to go further. You know, instead of the kind of managers we have now, oh, they're confident, very, very competent, but not willing to take big risks, not willing to move out of their comfort zones.
We'll be hearing more from David Shapiro later in the week. Now, our first wealth building tip of the week, and we're going to be focusing here on gold. Gold's a big part of many South African psyche and hopefully a lot of portfolios. But it has been running like a scalded cat, and perhaps it's got into the kind of bubble territory that some are calling with AI stocks in America. Our go-to man on mining is Peter Major, and here's what our guru shows us that, and he's going to be doing so all through the week, that it is time to be waving some red flags. He looks at how gold has performed against the money market, and my goodness, if this doesn't send a chill down a gold bug's spine, what will?
This is the money market index versus dollar gold. If you bought gold anywhere in 1979, 1980, it's taken you 45 years to get back where you would have been had you left your money in cash. But now it shows no matter when you bought gold, you've done much better than cash, no matter when you bought it.
It looks like a bit of a jagged V, where the top end of the V on the left-hand side, where it was clearly overpriced at that point, gold relative to money market, was around 1980. And we do recall, we've spoken enough about that big boom. The bottom of the V, the best point to buy gold relative to the money market, was, when's that, about 2006?
2004 at bottom, 2004, early 2005. From 0.3 to 1.6, I'd say five and a half times.
Where we're standing is at the same top of the V as we were at in 1980. My goodness, if that doesn't send chills down your spine as a gold bug, well, then I don't know what would.
I agree. From 1980 until 2004, that's 24 years, gold fell relative to the money market. For 24 solid years, you didn't want to buy in gold. It was safer and better to be in the money market. Now, for the last 20 years, gold has continued to beat the money market. This is just really risky territory.
Well, thank you for being with us tonight. We'll be back again tomorrow. Till then, cheerio.